Okay, thank you all for sticking with us during this time of technical difficulty. And that actually is a good segue into the topic of the shiur, which is difficulty. You could hear me offering a very heartfelt plea to God, please make this work, because it'd be really embarrassing if it doesn't. Say Tehillim for the computer. But so far, so good? On Zoom we can hear? In person we can hear? All right, terrific. I want everyone to take a moment to think about someone maybe in your life who only reaches out when they need something. Don't answer you when you reach out for what you want, what you need, or just to hang out. But when they need something, they always find your contact information. They always find a way to contact you when they need something. It's annoying, right? And maybe if you're that person in someone else's life, you don't have to say that out loud. But it's an annoying concept that there are people who only reach out when they need something, and they don't when everything is working out fine. And we have to ask ourselves, do we ever do that with Hashem? When things are fine, things are working out well, we at best daven. At best. Sometimes we don't daven, and sometimes we daven. We daven it up. The quote is, people say that Jews don't like davening. They like having davened. Like getting davening out of the way. But when something is wrong, when there's a big interview, a big test, a big surgery, a big event, then we daven, pull out our siddur, and we clap al chait, and we try to fix our ways, and we turn to Hashem in those moments. And the question is that a chutzpah? Are we that annoying friend, family member? Are we that annoying person to Hashem in that we reach out when something is wrong? We spoke last week and the week before about tefillah as a relationship. If tefillah is in fact a relationship, think about what it does to a relationship when a person only really reaches out when something is wrong. And is that damaging to a relationship? Does that mean we're doing something wrong when we all of a sudden, we don't turn to Hashem and say, I'm really sorry I haven't called in a long time. I'm sorry I've been kind of out of it the last couple of days, but like I really need this test or I really need this health, parnasa, whatever it is. Is that bad that we do that? What we're going to discuss tonight is that there's a halachic terminology for a person reaching out when something is wrong, and that is called tefillah be'eis tzara, tefillah at a time of distress. Tefillah at a time when something is wrong, when something is pressing, when something is exigent, and something is really ripping at us, and we turn to Hashem because we're lost, we turn to Hashem because now we suddenly need Him. What we're going to discuss is that tefillah be'eis tzara is not only not a chutzpah, it actually is the sincerest and perhaps most mandated type of tefillah, and even where tefillah is actually most powerful and most special in terms of relationship. Ilan raised the question at the end of our first shiur about if tefillah is so important, then why is it not counted as one of the taryag mitzvahs? Which actually is a question. Is tefillah counted as one of the taryag mitzvahs? The Gemara on the very first daf in Tainus darshins the pasuk we say in Kriyishma about serving Hashem ul'avdo b'chol levavchem. And the Gemara says, Ezo hi avoda shebelev. What does it mean to serve Hashem with your heart? And the Gemara comments, Zot tefillah. The Gemara is expounding a pasuk. Are we to take that Gemara literally? Is the Gemara telling us that tefillah can be sourced in a pasuk in the Torah? Well, the Rambam is source number one. When it counts the taryag mitzvahs, the Rambam counts tefillah every single day as a formal biblical mitzvah saseh, mitzvah number five. After we talk about believing in Hashem and fearing Hashem and loving Hashem, the Rambam writes, Lehispal elo shenamar v'yavadetam es Hashem elokeichem, bit of a different pasuk than the Gemara quoted, but the idea of avoda, and the Rambam quotes from the Gemara, avoda zohi tefillah. Avoda belev, that was the Gemara's expression. This refers to tefillah, and the Rambam counts it as a formal of the 248 positive commandments. Number five is mitzvah to daven. The Ramban, Nachmanides, he argues on the Rambam, as he usually does, and he argues in the Rambam's count, and he writes that he doesn't think so. He has many, many, many proofs from Chazal who refer to tefillah, Shmona Esrei, as Midr Abanan, in the case of Safek and other halachic terminology, where it comes out that the Ramban thinks that tefillah is clearly not a biblical mitzvah. But then the Ramban concedes one case where he thinks that tefillah might be a biblical mitzvah. The Ramban writes in source number two, V'imulai, maybe, yiyah midrasham b'tefillah ikar min haTorah. When Chazal said, avoda b'lev refers to tefillah, and that's a biblical mitzvah, if Chazal said that, nimnao so b'minyano shel haharav, then we should count it. V'nomar shehi mitzvah le'eis hatzaros, to daven at a time of distress, Shenamin shehu yisbarach v'yisale shomea tefillah, to believe that God hears our cries, v'hu hamatzil min hatzaros betfila v'za'aka. And God is the one who saves us when we scream out to him. He is listening and he cares. The Ramban writes, he's not sure if davening every single day should be counted as a biblical mitzvah of the Taryag, but he writes, if we're going to say that it is, it's probably only talking about tefila be'ez tzara, calling out to Hashem when something is wrong. Now, if the Ramban doesn't think this mitzvah to daven in and of itself, so then why would tefila be'ez tzara be counted as a mitzvah? So Rav Moshe Feinstein in source number 3 writes that the idea of the Ramban is that tefillah is part and parcel of emunah, part of the mitzvah of believing in Hashem. Rav Moshe writes in source number 3, Upashat sha'af ha'sovrim de tefillah hurak mi derabanan. Even the Ramban and others who do not count tefillah as a biblical mitzvah, hurak le'inyan le'hispao b'chol yom, af she'ein lo tzorech miyuchad. A person who just davens because it's required by the mitzvahs, that may not be midaraisa, according to the Ramban. Aval kishiyesh lo ha'adam tzorech miyuchad. When a person has something specific that they need. Kimo be'ez tzara. Interesting. Before we're talking about ez tzara. Now we're talking about a specific need. Even not a crisis per se. But a person needs something specific. And they turn to Hashem because they need something. Shulchiyav min ha'torah le'espal. Everybody agrees that it's going to be biblical in a moment where you actually need something. On the next line where it's underlined, or Moshe writes, so why the Ramban say maybe? The Kavanas Ramban bisfeka, when the Ramban says he's not sure, who emyesh lefarish hakra alzeh, if the Pasuk is really talking about that, if that's how we should count the Pasuk of Tefillah, mishum da'af below kra yadinanza, even if we had no source whatsoever, it's obvious we have to turn to Hashem, mitam dehu me'ikari hamuna. Think about it this way. What does it mean to believe in Hashem if he's not real for us to call out to when we need him? What makes our faith in Hashem more than just a philosophical exercise if when we actually have an opportunity to turn to him and ask him for health, parnasa, children, the things that only he can grant us, if we don't turn to him, then how is he real to us? We can say we believe in Hashem. We can spend zillions of dollars on tuition and we can on kosher food and keep Shabbos, but if we don't have a relationship with Hashem, and we've been discussing this, Rav Yosef Albo, Rav Hirsch approach of tefillah as a relationship, if we're not turning to Hashem when something is wrong, then maybe he's not really real to us. And for this reason, Rav Moshe writes a fascinating chiddush at the end where it's underlined in source number 3. V'kevan shemitzad yikari ha'amuna yesh chiyuv, hu chiyuv gam al ben noach lehesbal be'ez tzaraso. Even a person who's not Jewish would have the exact same obligation to dive into Hashem when he or she needs something. And this person, Jew or otherwise, will be rewarded for davening and turning to Hashem, which is a sign of faith. And turning to him, as if a person gets rewarded for anything they're obligated to do. In other words, Moshe Feinstein says, one of the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach is believing in Hashem. Believing in Hashem mandates that a person turn to Hashem when they have a need. Who else are you supposed to turn to? Turning to Hashem is a way of actualizing and making real our emunah b'Hashem. And if people, all of mankind, is obligated in emunah b'Hashem, then all of mankind is obligated to daven to Hashem. Because davening to Hashem is the realest form of emunah. So for step number 1, we can say that it's not a chutzpah. It's actually mandated. The one time, according to everybody, the Rambam holds davening at least once a day in some form or another is mitzvah. The Ramban argues that maybe there's no formal mitzvah saseh to daven every single day, but when a person experiences an eis tzara, a real distressing time, or Rav Moshe said a tzarech miyuchad, a specific need, then Rav Moshe said it's a function of emunah to turn to Hashem. So it's definitely not a chutzpah. The Torah demands of us to turn to Hashem when we have a need. But now the question is why? It's definitely mandated, according to all opinions, but why would that be, hashkafically? Why is it not the same as the child, the teenager, who only reaches out to the parent when something is wrong, but isn't interested in reaching out to the parent when things are working out fine? And for this, I share with you a story that I shared about a year and a half ago when I had my prebba. Obviously, the story went over well because things worked out over well. I'm sure you all remember the story very well because, like I said, things worked out pretty well. But I know people here were very nervous when I was having my prebba. I was totally fine. But there are other people who were really nervous, and maybe they didn't really fully internalize the story. So I repeat the story for that sake. They tell the story about a gigantic skyscraper with a handyman who's working on the roof of that building. And he leaves his cell phone downstairs charging in the you know, one of the classrooms. And he's on top of the gigantic building, and he puts a little rock to keep the door open, and somehow the rock shifts, and he's locked out. He's locked on this roof with no cell phone, many, many, many stories up, with no way of communicating to anyone that he's stuck up there. He figures at some point someone will come to look for him. But after several hours go by, and no one comes to look, he starts to realize that things are more dire than he imagined. So he looks over the side of the building, and he notices people walking down many, many, many dozens of stories below. And he starts to scream out to them. He says, "Hey, hey, I'm up here. Look, look. Help me get down." People are busy with their days in their cell phones. People are just absorbed in their own lives. He tries a different part of the building, looking over each side, screaming, "Hello, anybody? I'm here, and I need you to bring me down." No one's paying attention. Well, he's a handyman. What good is he if not for having lots of cash? So he pulls out his wallet, and he starts to throw down dollar bills. Throws down a dollar, $5, another dollar, raining down money. And the people down below, they notice the money. And they start to scoop it up and grab it and put it in their pockets and run off before someone can stop them. He says, "How is no one curious why it's raining money?" Pulls out larger 20s and 50s and 100s and starts throwing them down. And the more money he rains down, the more people are gathering, but the more they're quickly grabbing and running before someone can stop them. This is a disaster. He's losing all of his cash, and he's still stuck up on the roof. So he looks down by his feet, and he notices little tiny pebbles by his feet. And he starts to throw the pebbles down below. And all of a sudden, people start dodging out of the way. He dodges out of the way and keep on going. He picks up a little bit bigger rocks and starts dropping those rocks down. And all of a sudden, people down below say, "Hey! Who's throwing rocks up there? What are you doing?" He says, "Hi, hi. Happy I finally got your attention. I've been trying to get you for many, many hours by now. You took all my cash. Could you please help me get down?" Kiviyachal, if it could be, Hashem is up on high, trying to get our attention. Screaming, calling out to us, he needs us to make him real in this world. And he says, "Hello, I created the world, gave you health, all this good stuff. We're just so busy. We just mosey on by without a second glance." So God says, "Let me just rain down some money. If I give them good blessings, they'll obviously stop to look up to see where it's coming from, right?" Right? What do? We're so excited with our good fortune. We take what we need, just make ourselves extra busier with the good stuff we're given, and we march on to back to work. Hashem says, "Okay." Starts throwing a little pebbles, little distractions, little annoyances. And we just roll our eyes and dodge out of the way and say, "What is this? What's this happening?" Keep on going. Then he starts to throw down a little bit bigger rocks, things that are a little bit more dangerous. And all of a sudden we say, "Hey, what are you doing up there? Stop that. You have my attention. You don't have to hurt me." And God says, "Thank you. I've been trying to get your attention for a long time. It's nice to meet you. Now you can bring me down into this world. Now you can notice me." The idea of Tefillah Be'ez Tzara we could think about in terms of Hashem calling out to us. If we're not noticing him just by the world, by creation, by nature, and we don't notice when he starts raining down money and brachos and hatzlachos and all the wonderful things, then we have to start looking out for the little annoyances that come here and there. And if we're still not paying attention when we stub our toe or, you know, a deal goes a little bit sour or things get frustrating in traffic, then Rachman Watzlan, he has to do other things to get our attention. That's really what Hashem is doing in terms of relationship, in terms of getting our attention. Hashem is trying to get us to focus on him, trying to get us to notice him. And if we're not noticing that things are working out great, well then, we'll have to find another way to get our attention. In that sense, it's not really that we're only turning to Hashem because we need something and he's disgruntled and we should apologize to him for not paying attention sooner. It's because we haven't been paying attention sooner that he's trying to get our attention. And it's almost as if when Hashem is screaming out in that way, when giving us something to daven for, it's almost like he's saying, "Please call me back, it's urgent." Now, when a person responds to a message like that, how dare they? "You haven't spoken to me a long time. Then I leave you a voicemail that says, please call me, it's urgent. And then you call me, who do you think you are?" "Look, you called me and said it's urgent. So I picked up. It's true, I haven't been paying attention so much. But you told me it was urgent, so I called you back. You told me it was urgent, I had to call you back." Hashem manufactures situations to give us wake-up calls for things we're not paying attention to. And perhaps one thing we can take forward is that the next time something seems to go wrong, think of it as an urgent message from Hashem saying, "We got to talk." Tefillah Be'ez Tzara is a mitzvah. You haven't been calling so much. It's not a chutzpah to reach out when we need something. The fact that we need something is Hashem's way of saying, don't forget about me. Please call me back. And if we don't call at that moment, we're missing the last opportunity for a relationship, the best opportunity for a relationship. This is clearly the way how Chazal describe the tzaros that happened, personal tzaros and national tzaros. We quoted the source before in our very first year, speaking of tefillah as a relationship. In source number four, the Gemara Maseches Yevamos describes the avos going through times of barrenness, of childlessness, mepnei shehakadosh baruch hu mis'aveh letefilasan shel tzadikim. Hashem gives them a tzara, he gives them something unfortunate, he gives them a misfortune in order to force them, in order to bring them closer to Hashem. Now those are the avos. It's hard to argue the avos weren't paying attention. Avram Avinu looking at the sky, Yitzchak and Yaakov, it's hard to argue they weren't paying attention. But Hashem craved an even closer relationship. And at their level, whatever it was, Hashem wanted more. This idea is expressed so powerfully and so beautifully in Rabbeinu Bechai, one of the Rishonim, a Talmud of the Rashba, classic commentary on Chumash, and Parshas B'Shalach. One of the great ace tzaros in Jewish history. Jewish people trapped between a raging sea on one side and the charging Egyptians, their former taskmasters, or maybe current taskmasters, depending on how they viewed themselves. And they feel trapped and they feel stuck. And the Pasuk describes right before Kriyas Yamsuf, Pasuk describes Uparo Hikriv. And Paro, now it's translated as Paro came close. But those familiar with Hebrew grammar will recognize the word Hikriv in Hif'il means to cause something else to do that. Karav means he came close. Hikriv means Paro caused something else to come close. What does that mean? Paro caused what to come close? Paro charged. What did Paro cause to come close? So Rashi in that pasuk says, Hikriv is atzmo. Paro pushed himself. After all those miracles and all those makos, Paro had to push himself forward. He had to actively, causatively push himself forward. But Rabbeinu Bechai writes something amazing. Source number five, Paro Hikriv. Hikriv es Yisrael b'tshuva la'avihen shebashamayim. When Paro charged, when the Eis Tzara happened, Paro brought us closer to Hashem. V'zeu she'amar miyad v'yisu b'nei Yisrael ha'seineyem medavin to Hashem v'yitz'aku b'nei Yisrael ha'Hashem. And Rashi comments, tafsu umanus avoseyem. The Jewish people grabbed onto the crafts of their ancestors. You know from all the avos, they're the paradigms of tefillah. As he goes on to quote, we grabbed onto the crafts of our ancestors. Paro pushed us, brought us closer to Hashem. And he writes, V'alzanim shalu, where it's underlined, Yisrael l'tolas. Chazal say, the Navi says, we're compared to a worm. Matolas zo eina maka es harazim ela bepia. The hiraka o maka davar kasha. A small little termite, a small little worm can destroy an entire tree with its mouth. Kach ein lehem li Yisrael ela tefillah. Our tefillah, using our mouths, we can tackle gigantic problems with tefillah. And Rabbeinu Bechai goes on to quote a couple other sources where you clearly see that the idea of tzaros, famous tzaros, national tzaros in history were manufactured by Hashem in order to create this opportunity for us to come close.
We're going to come back for Shabbos.
Uh-oh.
We'll see that.
Can everyone please mute themselves? I can do that, actually. Right? So this is an opportunity for us to think about Jewish history, all the miracles that happened. He gives one example of Purim. In source number six, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Im Enos in Tshuva, when Bnei Yisrael do not come close to Hashem, either in Tefillah or in Tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maimid Lehem Melech Shegzeiros of Kashos Kahaman. Hashem arranged the Haman situation. Haman wasn't the king, but he acted as the king. He got the king's ring, and Hashem brought a Haman situation for the purpose of Yisrael Osen Teshuvah Umachzir Lemutav. Look how they're describing that. It's not necessarily because of sin. It's that if we're far, if we're not close to Hashem, he throws down rocks, he creates, he manufactures tzaros for the purpose of getting our attention. The Gemara Megillah in the next source has a similar expression. Vayaser HaMelech es Tabato, when the king Achashverosh hands over the ring to Haman to bring Haman to a point of power to scare all of us. The Gemara makes the comment: Amar Rabbi Ador Kahana Gedola Hasaras Tabas. More effective, greater was that removal of the ring. Yoser Me'arboyim V'Shmona Neviim V'Sheva Neviyo Shenisnabul Ani Yisrael accomplished more than all of the prophets that we ever had. Shekulan Lo Hechzirim L'Mutav. None of the prophets were able to get us to do tshuva in the same way. Ilu Hasaras HaTabas Hechzirasim L'Mutav. Our first point for tonight is to think about the idea of tefillah be'ez tzara as not reaching out to Hashem because we need something. Tefillah be'ez tzara is us responding to Hashem. He's left us an urgent voicemail that says, please call me back. We haven't been in touch in a long time. It's important. The more urgent the situation, the more kiviyachal, as if it could be, Hashem is more urgent for our tefillahs. He is more mis'ava for our tefillahs. If something seems wrong, if something seems distressing, it isn't a chutzpah to turn to Hashem. It's a proper response to Hashem's call. It would be a chutzpah not to respond at that point, to not recognize that we are experiencing something so meaningful in that moment. The relationship we've been talking about is heightened when one party reaches out and says, I need you. God doesn't need anything, but if anything we can say God needs, it's our relationship with us. And the way to do that is to throw down those stones, to create the hamans, to create those paros, and really applying it to our day-to-day lives. When there's a traffic, when there's a financial, when there's a health, when there's a shidduch, when there's a child, when there's a parent, when there's a whatever crisis, or whatever tzara, instead of looking at it as, why has God abandoned me? Or why has God disappeared? It's God's calling. I better answer that calling. It's an urgent call. The more urgent the crisis, the more urgent the call, the more there's a chiyuv to daven tefillah be'ez tzara. Very powerful idea. Let's take it a step further. Not only is tefillah be'ez tzara not a chutzpah, not only is tefillah be'ez tzara a chiyuv, not only is it something that builds a relationship because we're responding at the moment where Hashem is calling out the loudest and the most, but tefillah be'ez tzara has a certain power, a certain koach, a potency that maybe we don't have when we dive in a regular tefillah. The story goes back in the 1500s when Hernan Cortez, who was a Spanish conquistador, when he and his ships, his fleet of ships, came to conquer the Aztec Empire in Mexico, legend has it that after disembarking, he would burn down his own ships. Heard this before? Hernan Cortez, the famed, infamous, and he's like the villain in some movies about that time period. He used to burn his own ships to encourage his soldiers to fight. His reasoning was, if the people feel like if the war doesn't go so well, the conquering doesn't go so well, we can always retreat, get on the ships, and get out of here, then they're not going to fight to the death. To force his soldiers, to force his army to fight to the death, he left them no way out. He burned his own ships, forcing their backs against the wall to unleash and harness the greatest strength that these soldiers could possess. And he was a very successful conqueror. He was able to conquer the Aztec Empire in Mexico 500 years ago. I don't know exactly where he got this idea from, but it's possible he got it from our own tradition. I'll share with you a beautiful vort on this week's Parsha, of all perfect timing. Based on a pasuk in this week's Parsha about going to the war against Midian, and really going to war in general, the Rambam has a halacha that the Ramban counts as a formal mitzvah, and the Rambam counts as good advice. I gave it to you quoted in source number 8. The Rambam writes on the first line, "Kishetzaren al-ir letafsa, ein makifin osa me'arba ruchoseha." We are not allowed to siege a city by surrounding on all four sides, elam yishalosh ruchos, we must leave one side open, umanich en makam levrot leboreach, we have to let people escape if we're attacking their city, ulechom yishayirtza lehimaleid al nafsho. Simply understood, the reason we have to leave one side open when conquering a city is because of compassion. If they want to stay and fight, we'll take them down with siyata d'shmaya, and if they want to leave, they can leave. But the Torah Tamima in this week's Parsha, also the Mashal Chachma and others, they explain so beautifully this idea of Hernan Cortez, found in the Rambam, found in the Torah, many, many years before. The Torah Tmima in the third line of source number 8 writes, Uvatama pirtza, mevruach revias, why would we leave an opening for our enemies? Is it only compassion for them? Or is it a smart move by us? Yesh lomar mishom dim lo hanichu lehem kol pesach lehimalet, if we would not leave the enemy a chance and escape to leave, hayulochamim kulam kimisyashim, they would fight like people with no other option, like their abandoned hope because they have no choice. Acha'eris kochoseim to the last drops of their strength. Vayakasha kivushin lefnei Yisrael will be harder for us to fight them if they're fighting to the death. Masha'ein kainim yesh makam lanus ulihimale. It's a strategic decision on our part to let them have an option to escape because if they can, they're not going to fight as hard. Why am I mentioning this idea right now? Why does this idea relate to tefillah? This idea about having your back against the wall, feeling that we have no other option, to allow a person to harness the greatest strength within, maybe strength a person didn't know they had, when they had no other choice, and there's no chance to look somewhere else, and there's no chance to escape, a person is forced to buckle down and unleash an ungodly, a tremendous amount of pain into something powerful and potent. That is the idea of tefillah be'ez tzara. This idea could be seen in the story of Chana. Pasuk describes the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, that Chana was one of two wives of Elkanah. Elkanah had two wives, Chana and Penina, and Penina had lots of children, and Chana, Rechmano Litzlan, did not have any. And Elkanah loved her more, but she didn't have any children. And they used to go up to Shiloh to have karbanos and to eat. And the pasuk describes one fateful year, 1 year where Elkanah says in Pasuk Ches, in source number 9, Elkanah says to his wife, why are you crying? Why are you so sad? Why are you so depressed? Why are you not eating? Where it's bolded, Halo Anochi Tov Lach Me'aser Abanim. Aren't I better to you than 10 children? I don't need you to have children. I love you more than even Penina, who has all these children. Now, Elkanah, like any good husband, is trying to be supportive. And like any good husband, he makes things a whole lot worse. Because Hannah cries. And Hannah goes and she davens. Pasuk Yud, v'hi maras nefesh. Hannah was bitter and broken. V'tispal al Hashem. And Hannah cries. U'becho tifkeh. She davens and she cries. And she pledges to Hashem to devote her son to life of Hashem. Pasuk Yud Beis, v'haya ki herbasa lehispal lefnei Hashem. And when she kept davening more and more lefnei Hashem, she was finally answered. Pasuk Chaf, v'yehi l'tekufos hayamim, and many days later, v'tar chana, she finally became pregnant, v'telet bein v'tikra ashmo Shmuel, ki me Hashem she'altev, I requested him from Hashem. Why is it, after all those months and all those years of davening, Chana was never answered? But the Navi gives us this context of why she was answered. She had this fateful tefillah, and it came right after. It came right after Elkanah said to her, it's going to be fine. I don't really care. I love you enough that I don't care if you have children. Salvechik in source number 11 has a beautiful idea. He writes, "V'nira de b'chol hayamim v'ashanam shehayisa chana akara belov lad." All the years that Chana was suffering from infertility, halo bevaday hayu Elkana v'chana osim ki Yitzchak v'Rivka, just like we see in Parshas Toldos, Elkana and Chana must have been davening together. They went together for fertility treatments. They went together to the daven. They went together for brachos. They went together to hold each other's hands. They were so supportive of each other. But on this day, something changed. Elkanah is trying to be the good husband. He's trying to tell her, don't worry about it. I don't care if you don't have children. I still love you. But you know what she hears? I've given up on you. So you're not going to have children. It's not in the cards. It's not meant to be. And in that moment, it hits Chana. She's all alone. Where it's underlined in the next part. U'mikan ve'elech, after Elkanah says, it's just what Hashem wants. We can't change it. Chana nish'ara levada bodada. Chana remains isolated, all by herself. Bebechiyasa, petachanuneha. And now she's crying without her husband's support. He's no longer davening for her. He's no longer encouraging her. He's working on acceptance. V'hi maras nefesh. And now she's broken. Now she has nowhere else to turn. All of her bridges have been burned. All of her ships have been destroyed. She has no way out now. She can no longer rely on her husband, who's a big tzaddik, to daven for her. You know what she does now? Atispalel al Hashem ubachotivke. And now she davens to Hashem. But of course you daven to Hashem. Who else do you daven? No. Now she really davens to Hashem. Ubo bayom. It's that time for the first time. Chana magia lahakara. Chana finally has a recognition. She'ein la al milahi she'ein ela al Hashem. Because her husband, the Gadol Hador, has abandoned her. He's left her. Lo al Rebbe, lo al Rav. The Kohen Gadol Ke'eli HaKohen, the Aflo Al Elkanah Baila, Hatzadik. She can't trust the Rebbe, and she can't trust the Rav, and she can't trust the Kohen Gadol, who turned out to be very, very unsympathetic to her. And even her husband's given up on her. Al Arak Al Hashem Levado, V'az Nifkadachana. Talking Pasuk Yud Beis, V'haya Ki Hir Basal Lehespal Lefnei Hashem. Pasuk keeps emphasizing again and again and again that this tefillah was to Hashem. And she names the kid Shmuel, Kimei Hashem She'altiv, because I asked Hashem. Well, obviously you asked Hashem. Who else are you going to ask? No, the idea is she asked Hashem and only Hashem. For the first time, she had no other option. If soldiers at war fight with more power when there's no way out, if conquering Spanish conquistadors have more potency when there's no way off the island, then all of us, our tefillos, are half-hearted at best. We dive into Hashem for Parnasa, but we still go to work, and we trust we'll make it work at work. We dive in for Rafua, but we know we have a doctor's number in our contacts. We have an appointment next week. And as long as we feel like we have other aces in the hole, other religious aces in the hole, like Rebbe's to daven for us, or we have a tzibur davening for us, or other hishtadlus ways of earning money and getting Parnasa and making Shidduchim, as long as we feel we have other options, we're not all in. We had that escape. And we start to fight the war, and it gets hard, so we bolt. And we run back on the ship, back out of the city. I'm not going to buckle down. I'm not going to double down on this. It's only when a person is able to truly feel ein od movado, there really is no other way for me to achieve the things I'm davening for, except for turning to Hashem, that is when a person is able to unleash, when a person is able to harness the kochos of every last drop to really dive into Hashem. That's what an Eis Tzara does. An Eis Tzara removes the illusion that a person has other ways to accomplish those same ways out of the Tzara. When the Tzara gets so bad that we turn to Hashem, we finally get the calling. It's a mitzvah in that moment to dive into Hashem, because he's calling out to us. But in this moment, nothing else could possibly work. The Rav explained that's why we read about Chana on Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in source number 10 says that Chana was actually answered on Rosh Hashanah. But on top of that idea, on the last line of source number 11, Vizehu Malchios, Avodas Hayom Shah Rosh Hashanah, Ein Od Movado. Rosh Hashanah is all about recognizing Hashem's kingship and his domain and his power in every single area of our lives. And if we know it, we say it, we say we believe it. But when push comes to shove, when we're actually put in that foxhole, when we're actually stuffed to the point where we can't imagine surviving without him, and we, like Chana, turn to Hashem with no other options. Her husband left her husband abandoned her, and now she davens to Hashem. Now kimi Hashem she'altiv. She really, truly davens to Hashem, and only to Hashem in that moment. That's when tefillah is so powerful. Tefillah be'ez tzara is not a chutzpah. Tefillah be'ez tzara is a person finally realizing that all of their pain, all of their needs could be answered by Hashem only. We're not going to have time for it right now, but in source number 12, the Gemara says at the end of the Sechah Sota that is when Mashiach is going to come eventually. Things are going to get really, really bad, awful, one struggle after the next, and it's only going to be Ikfas Mashiach. We're only going to have Mashiach come on the last line, Va'alma yesh lanu lehi she'ein, Alavinu Shabbat Shemayim. This is a Mordechai Ben David song. Ella, Ella, Alavinu Shabbat Shemayim. We only, right? Eilano Almila Hisha'in. We only can turn to Hashem. When we truly feel that we have no other option but to turn to Hashem, that is when we're going to be able to bring Mashiach. When it hurts enough, when we feel the calling enough, when it feels broken enough, when we can't stand it anymore, and there's no other options out, when a person davens like that, they daven the most powerful tefillahs. To wrap up our discussion for tonight, and the real takeaway, to really bring this home, is the idea we don't have to wait for an actual Eis Tzara. We don't have to wait for a potent, we don't have to wait for an existential crisis. We don't have to wait for things to get to the point of life and death. We don't have to wait for pain and suffering. A person has the ability to tap into this mindset all the time. I gave it to you from two of our great thinkers in the last 100 years, of Yerucham Levavitz, Mir Yeshiva, and Rav Salavechik in source number 14. Yerucham Levavitz is commenting on the story of the Kriyas Yamsuf, where Chazal said, Rabbeinu B'chaya quoted it before, Chazal said, Tafsu b'umanas avoseinu, that tefillah was utilized in that moment. And Rav Yerucham writes, in that moment, we not only learned how to apply tefillah to an Eis Tzara, but actually using an Eis Tzara taught us what tefillah is about all the time, where it's underlined in source number 13, Ki sod hadavar hu, ki etzala klal Yisrael tamid hinam b'bechinas min ha-meitzar. If you think about it, we're always in an Eis Tzara. Even when we're not acutely experiencing a very dangerous threat, if you think about it, our life is always in the hands of Hashem, no matter how many times we try to imagine otherwise, or in how many ways we're able to distract ourselves. Where it's bolded, Halo be'emes, eini tanu kol chiluk, bein matzav shel harchava v'harvacha, ubein matzav shel lachatz v'tzara. Rav Yerucham writes so beautifully, there is no real machshavik difference between being in a state of pleasure and a state of relaxation and one of great pressure. Tamid anu tuluyim al belima, we're always hanging in the air. Be'ein mamish, kol maimad umahalich, ve'elmin neftach umi yoshienu, who's supposed to save us in any given moment? Ein lanu vadei lehisha'ein, el alavinu shabash shemayim. And that is the idea of tefillah all the time, ein od movado. Sometimes we need a crisis situation to wake us up and realize that. But once we're paying attention, once we respond to the call, once we realize he's been calling out to us for a long time, it doesn't help to then move on with the busy street. Once the guy on the roof gets our attention, we have to bring him down and treat him well and have him be here. Rav Salavechik explained this is how we can reconcile the idea we started off with the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam, Maimonides, said that tefillah is a mitzvah every single day. And the Ramban conceded only tefillah be'ez tzara is a biblical mitzvah. Rav Salavechik said when the Ramban conceded that tefillah be'ez tzara, that's the case of tefillah midaraisa, the Ramban conceded the entire machlokas to the Rambam. Because the Rambam holds every day is an Eis Tzara. And they hold the exact same thing. Let's read it together. Source number 14. The views of Maimonides and Nachmanides can be reconciled. Both regarded prayer as meaningful only if it is derived from a sense of Tzara. All tefillah is be'ez tzara. They differ in their understanding of the word. Maimonides regarded daily life itself as being existentially in straits, in narrows, inducing in the sensitive person feelings of despair, a brooding sense of life's meaninglessness, absurdity, lack of fulfillment. It is a persistent tsara which exists b'chol yom, daily. The word tsara connotes more than just external trouble. Tsara suggests an emotional and intellectual condition in which man sees himself as hopelessly trapped in a vast, impersonal universe, desolate, without hope. Certainly, the psalmist's cry, "Menametzer karasi ka," wasn't only referring to a person experiencing outside troubles. It's a person experiencing life itself as being empty, life itself being hard, life itself being an eis tzara. The Rav writes, looking two paragraphs later, the two types of tzara, the external tzara, disease or financial troubles, and the Rambam's existential tzara, vary in many aspects. The surface tzara of Nachmanides is an external crisis which arises independently of man. The environment is dangerous. Next paragraph. The depth tzara of Maimonides, however, is an inner, personal, clandestine, and undefined crisis which is not readily manifest to the eye. Person doesn't appear to be in a matzav of tzara. It is perceived only by thinking and sensitive persons who wish to identify with it. It takes work for us to pay attention. It can be evaded. We can dodge those rocks. We can dodge the things of life that remind us of our futility. It can be shunted aside by superficial people who will thereby avoid being affected. I don't feel like I'm in tsara. I feel pretty good right now. I have a home. I have an air conditioner. What more could I want? I have food, clothes, I have cars. Life is great. A person could ignore those types of tsaras. Others, however, search for it and willingly accept it. The depth crisis of the Rambam is clearly beyond solution. It is an existential reality, a condition of human existence. Human neediness, the idea of just being a human in this vast world, is itself the tzara that the Rambam sees every single day. That tzara will be felt more poignantly by persons of greater intelligence and imaginative perception. The wiser and more sensitive one is, the greater the crisis. This crisis is rooted in man's essence, his metaphysical origin. It is existential. It's not based on situations. It's not based on circumstances. The Torah bids man to actively combat and possibly eliminate superficial external crises. Poverty, disease, and war distract us from living spiritual freedom. However, the Torah encourages man to submit to and embrace the experience of the depth crisis. Thereby does man truly grasp the reality of his condition and become stirred to great heights of the spirit. For this depth crisis, there is no solution except prayer. Surface crisis can be overcome. The disease can go away. Finances can be reorganized. But the existential crisis can only be met by prayer. The Rambam and the Ramban agree that tefillah has to come from a sense of tzara. But what the Ramban described as being an acute, sudden onset of an external problem, there's a war, there's a pandemic, there's a financial crisis, there's a sudden need to marry off a child, all of a sudden we say, help! Help! I need help now! That's great. We're responding to the call. We're responding to a challenge. The Ramban would say, that's how we have to daven every single day. When nothing is wrong. When nothing is wrong. If Chana responds to an external crisis of childlessness at a time of hopelessness and despair and says, now I have no option, now in Olmovado, now I feel that I only can turn to Hashem, the Rambam would say, that's how we have to always daven, regardless of how well off we are financially, how healthy we are, how well off our family is, how many kids we have married off, how many cars are in our driveway, how many vacations we have. We are always in a matzav of tzara. All tefillah is tefillah be'ez tzara. Rev Hirsch, we've been quoting since the beginning of this series, Rev Hirsch would say, if we don't currently feel this way, if we don't really feel when I go to daven, a regular shacharis, a regular mincha, on a regular day, I don't feel like I'm in existential crisis. I don't feel like the world is falling apart. I don't feel like life itself is empty. Rav Hirsch would say, that's the most important reason to daven. Tefillah is reflexive. Tefillah allows a person to connect with the things that they don't currently feel. We're trying to bore it into us. We're trying to inculcate it within ourselves. And if we don't feel it, that's the best reason to daven. That's the most important time to daven. Tefillah is not a chutzpah when it comes from a sense of need or a sense of tragedy or a sense of pain or a sense of anything. That's tefillah. Ta-da! That's it! That's what tefillah is. Tefillah is recognizing a need, recognizing Hashem as one who can give it to us, and responding to the call, whether it's an acute call or a more subtle existential call of life itself. We can't live, we can't breathe. The world doesn't function without Hashem holding it together. We are always alone, we are always empty, we are always lost without tefillah. Tefillah is always responding to a matzav of tzara. So these are our takeaways for tonight. Number one, everyone agrees, the Ramban, everyone agrees one has to daven in a time of need. Rav Moshe told us it was an expression of emunah. To truly believe in Hashem means to have a relationship with Him, especially when you feel Him calling out to you. And for that reason, it's not a chutzpah. Rabbeinu Bechaya told us we're responding to Hashem, creating, manufacturing a tzara, manufacturing a way to get our attention. And to respond is not really us reaching out when we need something. It's responding to Hashem saying, I left you an urgent voicemail. Thank you for calling back. Number three, tefillah be'ez tzara is the most powerful form of tefillah. Where we finally recognize, Ein ol mevada, like Chana did, the idea of burning our bridges, finally realizing we have no one to turn to but Hashem. It comes bursting out of us. We're unleashing this terrible, this a powerful, powerful relationship. As the Rav said, the goal is to have this attitude every single day, whether things feel great or they don't feel great. Sometimes we use an acute tragedy to be able to recognize Hashem in everyday life. And perhaps to suggest something practical, always looking to make this practical. We talked about this in the first couple of Shirim. Every time we're davening, we're praising Hashem, we are putting ourselves in a mindset of Ein Ol Mavado. He's the Chonin Hadas, Rafei Chalei Amo Yisrael, Mavarech HaShanim, Shomei HaTevila, HaMavarech HaSamo Yisrael BaShalom. That's what we're turning to. If we recognize our own neediness, and our humbleness, and to turn to Hashem and recognize every atah is a relationship, every praise of Hashem in davening is a reminder of our great need for Him, hopefully we should be zocha to daven to Hashem in every single situation, to daven be'ez tzara, and ultimately have a connection with Him at every single time. So next week, we continue on with talking about the idea of kavana, davening with kavana, and the davening without kavana, how we can maximize that experience.